I find my mind drawn to certain portions of Scripture quite often. One of those is Titus 2. Very practical instructions. I like how Alistair Begg describes, if I can put it, similar, something like this: believing is living. In other words, it's one thing to know something, but it's another thing to actually make it a part of our lives. And had some very good instructions in Titus 2, both to the older men, the older ladies, older sisters, the young men and the young ladies. And then he even talks about the relationship between employer-employee or master-servant. But as he comes and brings it together, he gives us some very, very helpful words. The grace of God that bringeth salvation to all men hath appeared, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live godly, soberly, and righteously in this present world. And move right on, and that moves our hearts toward longing for his return. It's one of those scriptures that I have found that brings delight to my heart over and over again. It's one of those similar to that has become the anchor for my soul in a lot of ways is Philippians 3 and Paul's testimony of he recognizes after he says some of the things that he longs for and said, but I'm not there yet. But I want to get there. And I said, with all of my heart, as I paraphrase it, I'm going to pursue it. And I would so encourage every family here, particularly the younger ones and those who are now past that, to support your younger ones, younger families with smaller children, to pursue God that way, pursue His will for your life, make it a passion to please Him. I realize my illustration won't be as meaningful to you and wasn't for me for many, many years, but I think you'll be able to connect. I'll put it, make it personal, firsthand. Soon after we moved back to Holmes County, after having lived in Texas for 31 years, having very little encounter with horses and buggies on the road, I was coming home from work, and I saw something in the distance that caught my attention just up the road. I think I was coming around a curve, coming down the hill just for our place, and this horse and buggy were coming towards me. And the closer they got, the more alarmed I started feeling. It looked almost like something was a little bit out of control. As I got closer, you could see this man in this little buggy, and he had his foot way out front like this, and he was hanging on to the reins like his whole life depended on it. And I didn't know, did I want to turn around and get out of his way, or what's going to happen? And then I was, oh, not so frightening. He's training a horse. And I saw him boom, 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 kind of quieted down a little bit. I'm probably overacting. I'm maybe making it stronger than it was. But it was a little scary there when I first saw it. I hadn't seen it for years. But what I saw there is not a situation out of control. It's actually most times a very controlled situation, the training of a horse. Now, if that were the normal scene I would encounter or anyone would encounter in Holmes County or the areas where there's horse and buggies used as a transportation by a lot of people, if that were the normal scene, I think we would be justified to question the sanity of people using a horse and buggy to get around. I would, and I think you would too. You would say, I think there's a better way, even for those who want to have that way. Because that's not the normal scene you see when you see a horse and buggy, what scared me at first. But you see, that what I saw was a very valid and useful and important part of training a horse. Equipping a horse to be useful in getting those who are sitting in the carriage from point A to point B in a controlled, manageable way. But now the difference between what I saw And what I normally see when I encounter horse and buggy is simply the tension of the reins. You know what I mean by reins, those two leather ropes they use? The tension that's happening. What I saw was, it was extremely tight. Now, most times when I encounter a horse and buggy, there's reins there. Always, actually. Not most times, always. But they're not that way. And so the valid question I bring before you, why? What makes the difference? Well, the difference is in training or having been trained. The purpose of the reins are different. In training, they are to control the horse. Once a horse has learned to obey, then the reins are used to guide the horse. That makes sense to you? And in this message, which is, by the way, I'm partial, is my favorite of the 4 to 5. Most times I have 5 messages in this series, and you were gracious to put it down to 4 for our sake, so Anna could come along, and it's been very precious to me to have her here. This has ended up to be probably my favorite message to preach, to teach. There's a couple reasons for that. In all my life, I have never heard a message particularly narrowed down to this. The parental role, when you have children in your home that should have some semblance of having learned to control themselves, to have self-control, they have been trained, they've been disciplined to know what a no means, they are responsive to that, but now they're at the place where the mother and father, whether they do it or not, should have learned to let the reins out a little bit and give some measure of freedom that you wouldn't have given to a 4-year-old. Where the father now and mother are called to honor some of the choices and respect the individuality and the age and the accountability before God of a child that up till now was basically being controlled. And it's a huge shift for mother and father to adjust to. Many of us have not done well, and we have harmed our children because of it. We did not learn or know how to let the reins out a little bit. So there's something we can learn from that lesson. The process of training infants and very young children takes place in an environment of strict control, should anyway. You tell them when to eat, when they go to bed, when they pick up the toys, even when they're allowed to play with toys. You tell them when they're going to have their bath. You don't let them choose whether they're going to have a bath or not. I'm just giving some very, very simple illustrations. You are controlling their actions and their activities. Though even in then, you may give a little bit of leeway at times for some personal choices, but as a general rule, mom and dad are setting the order of the home. It means that parents are setting the parameters of what is and what is not acceptable for the child. While it is true that parents must never relinquish their responsibility to determine how the home is ordered, it does change in how this is done as children grow through the changes of puberty and on to young adulthood. The relationship moves from, I am giving orders. Our roles change from unquestioned obedience to bringing the children into a relationship as what I call trusted advisors if they're still at home. And I should have qualified. This message is primarily focused on older children who are still living at home, where mom and dad are by God commissioned to be in charge of the home, not the 21-year-old. So the relationship moves from when I'm giving orders, our role changes from unquestioned obedience to bringing the children to a relationship as trusted advisors. They're able to contribute to situations that come up in the home that need to be addressed. But it's a work in process. It's a certainly The degree of that happening is much greater for a 19-year-old than, say, for an 11-year-old by virtue of experience and maturity. But it should begin earlier than what many of us are willing to do. My point is that a child who has been biblically trained will be helped by continual guidance. What they do not need is strict control. I want to go on record to give a clear statement that my personal understanding and judgments are different from some other people. And there's room, there's enough latitude in each of our experiences that we can have some diversity here, particularly in that last statement. But what I would appeal that we do not neglect is understanding, appreciating, and a commitment to put into practice the value of learning to give freedom to our children as they grow older. And they will make decisions that will make us uncomfortable. Granted, it's going to happen. They may have some things that they value that we're just not sure. And it takes grace to work through some of that. Now, having given that principle, I would hope that you would be interested in having some practical guidance and advice on how that can work itself out. And I just, it's helpful to remember that all of us are going to go through this learning curve. Experiences are about the only way many of us will really learn how to do it well. But I would have a longing, and I have a passion about this, that some teaching will help you if you're in it, right in the middle of it, always say, ooh, that's not the way it should be. And I remember that principle from Scripture. That should get me back on the right track. That would be so delightful to me if this message would help you in that way. And then we need to face the challenge that what works for the oldest child may not work for the next one. We need to have some tolerance in our life. Some respect, and that comes from having a deep respect for their individuality and for their relationship with Christ, if they're believers. And that's not always the case. So I'm going to offer four principles, what I consider biblical principles, that should anchor how we relate to these situations. But before I do that, I want to draw our attention to a couple of scriptures that highlight the importance of what I will be teaching. The first one is the occasion in Numbers. Right now I'm blank. You'll remember the situation, but I can't think of the text. I should have written it down. But this was instructions from God through Moses in the law that if parents have a rebellious child, they call him a son, he gives them instructions how to deal with it. And that's though it's old covenant, the principle remains in my understanding. That principle is supported by two very clear scriptures in the New Testament that I'm going to ask you to consider. You may have never thought of it when you read it. There's a list of grievous sins in Romans 1. It follows after he talks about the digression, the progression downward from God's standards, where people reject God. And then this starts happening. They don't want to know about God, and so their minds become darkened, and they end up with perverted hearts. And then he gathers this together with a whole list of grievous, horrible sins. I don't know if any of you have ever recognized that he or thought about it or it struck you. In that list is disobedient to parents. For many years, I had a hard time connecting. It's obvious he's not talking about the obedience that we've been teaching of a 5-year-old or a 4-year-old. Or even an 8-year-old. He is addressing adults when he says disobedient to parents. You have a similar scripture almost verbatim. Again in a list in 2 Timothy 3, if I'm correct. Again, you have inserted right in there, disobedient to parents. And I have not been able to come to grips with where that all goes. But this much I am sure of, that if a child is still living at home, even as an adult, there is a level of obedience that God asks of that child that is very, very sacred and for the home. And I would call you young men and young ladies who are in that place to recognize that. One thing that I think we should also recognize in these situations, when God addresses the young person who's disobedient, he's not addressing the father and mother. Just like when you have marriage issues, we call them issues, problems, serious problems, and he addresses the wife, he's not telling the husband how he should think about the matter. He's talking to the wife. Now, the same is true when God speaks to the husband. It's not that the wife should be listening and said, yeah, if he'd fix it, the marriage would be fixed. He's talking to the husband. You'll find that in every order that God has given, when he addresses the one, he's speaking to that one. Our tendency is to zero in. If I'm an employer and I hear the message to my employees, which I'm not an employer and don't have employees, but suppose I am. When I read the scripture about master-servant relationships, you know what I pick up on? Oh, that's what they should do. They should respect me. They shouldn't steal from me. They should honor me. And so my tendency is to try and force them to be that way. No, that's not what God's telling me. He's telling me as the employer, you treat your slave as if he's your brother, because he is your brother in your Christ. You treat him with honor, whatever it's called there. This is significant. I would like to say that if you are working through this as mothers and fathers and the tension rises at times in the home and you come, oh, did you see that? You take your son, look, God says being disobedient to me is about like being an adulterer. You better shape up. You let God speak to your child. You do your role. Now, I don't know how far to take that, and I realize there are situations, and if I have time, I'll use a very personal experience from Ann and I in our life that will help you relate to this. I don't know how far to take that. There are situations where the disrespect and disobedience reaches a level that there must be some actions taken. I understand that. But that's not the general course of this. And so when God is calling for obedience to parents, the primary call is to the children at home. And don't hammer home on that, parents, and say, look, you have to because God says so. You take your role as a godly parent, let God work on your child. I hope I'm not wrong on understanding it that way. Okay, the first principle I'm going to appeal to you to consider. We're now looking at a situation where the child, some of the children, if not most of them, are older. And you're understanding, as difficult as it is, that you're going to have to shift a little bit in how you relate to them. And you're going to have to learn how to respect their individuality and their walk with Christ and their sensitivity to Christ. And you have to learn to respect some choices that may make you a little uncomfortable. Not sin issues. No, no, no. And I could read, the one of the first ones my mind goes to is music. It's such a huge issue. And the diversity among us and what younger people sometimes enjoy just puts us on edge as older generation. And